when I jump on my bike and I know I need to ride for the next 24 mm-hmm. hours or 48 hours mm-hmm. and I don't need to care about anything else, and I have no bigger pleasure than that. Mm-hmm. I just feel that I'm free. Mm-hmm. I just feel that I can go anywhere I want. I can do whatever I want, and I'm on my bike.
Fabulous.
And that's it.
Yeah.
This is what it makes me feel to jump. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. The pleasure is so big. I don't think there is something else that makes me happier than that.
That was ultra endurance cyclist Marcin Ciuana, and this is the All Things Risk Podcast, episode 2. Welcome to episode 2 of the All Things Risk Podcast. This is a show that explores the themes of risk, uncertainty, resilience, applied to all manner of domains, things like sport, the arts, travel, culture, through long-form conversations with interesting people. If you caught episode 1, I would be grateful if you could leave a review or some feedback. allthingsrisk@gmail.com. That would be very, very, I'd be very grateful for that. Thank you very much. I wanted to start off this episode with a quote that I was reminded of. It's a quote from Winston Churchill, and it is this, quote, "The maxim, nothing prevails but perfection, can be spelled PARALYSIS, end quote. In other words, perfection is paralysis. And I think I latched onto this quote this week because I had released episode 1 earlier. And if I had known just a few things that I know now, I would have done the first episode a little bit differently. I would have cleaned up the sound, for example. I would have, I think, gotten my social media strategy a little bit different, but it didn't matter. It doesn't matter. It was important that I got the first episode out and get myself up and running. And the point I wanted to really make and to explore as a theme in this episode is this. We are not automatons. When we look at uncertainty, we don't and we can't make cold, hard calculations about everything. And sometimes, in fact, quite often, we need to explore the unknown. We need to revel in uncertainty. And that might mean trying new things. It might mean exploring something through trial and error. And I think this is really important, not only for individuals, it is important for personal growth. It's also very important for organizations. In fact, that's how innovation happens. We need to be allowed to fail. And that's how we learn. So I'm not saying this because I think we should be reckless from time to time. I'm not talking about that. There's a place for planning, and I think we talk a lot about that in this show later on. But it is about exploring the unknown and taking advantage of uncertainty and finding those opportunities. And it's a theme that we explore, as I said, throughout this week's show. Before I get into introducing the guest that I have this week, I want you to imagine something. You are riding a bike. You have been riding for about 12 hours. You're climbing a hill on your bike. This is about the 10th time you've climbed a hill in the last 2 hours. And the lactic acid is starting to build up in your legs. You're somewhere in the UK. You're not quite sure where. It's March, or maybe it's November, which means it's probably dark. it's cold, it's windy, you're fighting a headwind, and it's raining. And you are having the time of your life. Now, you might think about that situation and say, that's crazy. Well, folks, I introduce to you my guest this week, Marcin Ciuana. Marcin is an ultra-endurance cyclist. He's based in London. He's originally from Romania. And last summer, he competed in his first bike race. Well, this wasn't any bike race. This was the Transcontinental Bike Race. And what is that? That is an approximately 4,500 kilometer race. It starts in Belgium. It goes all the way to Istanbul, Turkey, crossing the Bosphorus and into the Asian side of Istanbul. So it crosses both continents. It is one stage. So as soon as the gun goes off, the clock doesn't stop. There's no support. You cannot get any support. You don't have a team. You don't have a team car. You can't get any support from any of the other riders. If you so as much as take an energy gel from another rider, you are disqualified. There's no route, but there are four checkpoints that you have to hit. It's a bit of a throwback race. It goes back to the sort of early days of the Tour de France, where, as described by the Transcontinental Race website, the competitors were really mavericks, vagabonds, and adventurers. And it really is a test of human endurance in the most brutal way of ways. So this was Marcin's first race. He finished it. And that's saying something because most of the competitors do not. But there's a lot more to him than that. Now, you might think, well, this must be a guy who has raced bicycles or cycled all his life. You couldn't be further from the truth. A few short years ago, Marcin could barely get himself up and over the local hill on his bike. And he slowly built up the distances from 100 kilometers to 200 kilometers. To now well over 500 kilometers is a kind of typical, maybe, ride. He's a bit of a legend on something called Strava. Strava is this sort of social networking site for cyclists and runners. And last year he did this epic 2,000 kilometer ride from London up through Scotland, across the Scottish Highlands, and back down the other way, back into London. But Marcin is a super nice guy. I've been out riding with him a few times, not 500 kilometers, mind you, but he has a very unique philosophy on cycling, on all of life, and I think that will come through as you listen to this talk. Now, getting back to the point about whether or not he's crazy, well, you know, I came away from the discussion thinking, you know what? This guy might be one of the few sane people we have in the world, and that perhaps everyone else is crazy. I won't get into too many details because I want to get right into it, but I'm hoping that you come away with that same impression. So I give you Marcin Ciuana. Enjoy. Thank you for joining me, Marcin. I needed to talk to you because you're becoming a legend on Strava. Strava is this app, and Marcin rides his bike. When he rides his bike, it's hundreds of kilometers. And this summer, he completed something called the Transcontinental Race, the TCR, It's just amazing. So I wanted to talk to Marcin about
lots of things, but let's start at the beginning. So you're based in London, but you're from Romania.
Yes.
You moved to London a few years ago. But when you were growing up, were you interested in cycling? When did you have this idea, or something else? What was it like growing up?
To be honest with you, I started to cycle when I moved to UK.
Okay.
That was 5 years ago. Yes, I was born in Romania, and 5 years ago we decided half of the life is gone, so we need to be more happy. We need to see places. We need to enjoy the life.
Okay.
So after a short holiday here, I don't know why this country, maybe because it's on an island and I love water, so I was falling in love with this country.
Right.
So I wanted to move here for several years.
Okay.
That's why we moved here five years ago and we started life here.
Mm-hmm.
I started to cycle in 2012, at the end of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to cycle because I couldn't run anymore.
Okay.
You had
some knee problem or some...
Not really knees, but I had some problem with the joints.
Okay.
And it started to be... I was running a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I was boxer. When I was in my 16s, 18s.
Right.
And I was enjoying running. But because of my pain with joints, I stopped to run, and then I was looking for another alternative.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I said biking could be something that I can do. So I bought a bike in 2011, and I started to do short rides, like 5-10 kilometers.
Okay.
Around.
What kind of bike was it?
It was a very cheap one. My first bike was bought from the market,
right?
And it was like £150 or something like that. I was just,
it's like a hybrid.
I just
bike
saw
or something.
A bike on, yeah. in the market, and the yeah. color was nice, and I said, okay, I want to have this.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought it and I started to ride.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when I started to like biking.
Mm-hmm. Okay, when you moved to the UK from Romania, you said half the life was missing. What do you mean by that?
Well, back in my country, I was just working.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't enjoy life the way I enjoy it now.
Mm-hmm.
It was just work, and after 35 years, I realized I need to do something for my body, for my soul, for to enjoy the life, to feel the life.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's when
what
you
decided. I'm doing now.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Okay. So you bought this bike. You're doing 5K, 10K rides, something like this.
Yeah, just moving from one park to another, or riding until the M25 and coming back.
Okay.
I mean, these kind of rides were done in a weekend, and it was something awesome for me, and something that like an achievement, because I've never biked before.
Right.
So really, 35 kilometers to M25 and then coming back in the same day, it was something amazing.
Right. Well, 70 kilometers. So. Not bad, more or less.
Because I didn't bike before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 35 or 50 kilometers on the bike, it was something amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this is how I started to bike, and then because I like this country so much, I wanted to see the country.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, I can see the country on my bike.
Mm-hmm.
So I chose to see Dover for the first time.
Okay.
This was my first big ride.
Yes.
and it took me 2 days to go to Dover and come back. I needed to sleep one night in Dover in a hotel because I was very, very tired. Yes.
And well, it's not close by bike. It's, what, 129 kilometers? That's a good ride for a day.
Well, it took me a whole day.
Yeah.
And what, it was even worse because my bike was very, very cheap.
Yeah, yeah.
I had,
so you're talking a hybrid bike. It had flat handlebars.
Yes.
Big tires.
Not really big tires, but the problem was they were very cheap.
Yeah.
And I had like 10 punctures.
Along the way, so you became expert on puncture repair.
Well, yeah, the last one, I could fix it in less than 10 minutes.
Okay.
So it was, this is when I've learned how to fix a puncture.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes you get a puncture by fixing a puncture. So.
Well, could be possible because at that time I didn't know I need to check the tire. Maybe
the
glass is still inside.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably that was one of the mistakes I've learned. But
but you got to Dover.
Yeah, I went to Dover and it was amazing. I was sitting probably for 2 or 3 hours on the top of the White Cliffs, and it was something amazing. So I enjoyed, the bike ride was not so pleasant because I was not used with the traffic, and I was not used to ride or to drive on the other side of the road.
Yeah.
And it was not so pleasant, but I enjoyed to see the country. I enjoyed the landscapes. I enjoyed the people. I enjoyed, when I arrived there, I realized I did an achievement for me.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. I felt amazing.
Yeah.
And I was very tired.
Yeah.
So I phoned my wife and I said, I need to stop. I need to sleep. I cannot come back. So I slept there, and next day in the morning I biked back. So this was my first long ride. It was 260 kilometers, and it really took me 2 days
On a not so great bike.
It was not a bike. I didn't have shoes with cleats, and it was just normal. But it was the start of
the bug, the feeling. Yeah,
and then when I came home, my bike just broke.
Oh, did it? Okay.
Yes, I was on top of. It was the first time when I climbed Westerham Hill.
Westerham Hill, yes.
Yeah, on where is the Biggin Hill Airport?
Yes,
you know that hill.
Yes,
I'm sure every cyclist should know that. So, because my bike was not so good and I had it was broken, I couldn't climb on the hill. I climb only on I'm up to half of the hill.
Okay.
And then I needed to go on foot.
Okay. All right.
So this hill was some kind of one of the hills that I wanted to conquer.
Yes.
So when I bought my first proper bike, I went there
I'm climbing this hill.
I climbed that hill in one day like 14 times.
Wow.
I like that hill. I don't know why. Maybe it's the first hill that I realized is.
It's a nice hill. It's steady and it's.
It's not so big, but it's very steep.
Yeah, yeah.
And these are nice.
Okay, so you got yourself a proper bike after how much?
Well, after I came home, then the next bike was I think £900.
Okay.
It was a first level or first entry bike. I'm not sure how it's called. But it was a very good bike. I loved that bike. And I started to ride.
Right.
The bike was good. So I had no problems for the next, I think, 2 years.
Right.
I didn't have any problems with the bike. And I just went outside.
Then you... It seems to me like you started a bit of a weekend ritual of going out for long rides. We talk long rides. When we talk long rides with Martin, it's always a bit relative because now long is, I don't know, 1,000 kilometers or something like that. But you started to go every weekend. You say, I'm going, what did you do? You looked at the map and you said, I would like to go here.
Well, to be honest with you, my colleagues at work, they realized I'm going every weekend with my bag outside. Well, I was thinking, well, if I did Dover, I can go anywhere in England and maybe more. Mm-hmm. So I just started to slowly go on longer and longer rides. Mm-hmm. I started 200 kilometers, 300, 350, 400. Wow. Yeah. And then...
In one ride, you didn't stop.
Well, I stopped to eat.
Well, stopped to eat, but not overnight.
No, mm-hmm. just one ride.
Wow.
I was afraid to ride during the night because I didn't know what's happening. Yeah. I never did it, so I didn't know. Usually, I was starting very early in the morning, like 3 or 4 in the morning, and then... Mm-hmm. I was riding until mid of the day, and I realized, okay, if I turn back now, I will be in London like 11 in the evening, so it will be okay. But then I saw someone did a 500 kilometers ride from Newcastle to London, so I said, I want to do that. Mm-hmm. And then I joined, I don't remember the team, I joined the team that was doing this ride, so I did a ride with them. It was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Riding through the night, it was amazing because for the first time I was feeling like I'm king of the road. Mm-hmm. Because during like 11 p.m. until in the morning at 6, no cars on the road, no traffic. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. Just you and your light and your bike. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. So since that time, I said, okay, I can do that alone. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can ride through the night. So I started to ride through the night.
Just on your own?
On my own, yeah. It was, at the beginning, it was a bit like, I was feeling uncomfortable because it was night. Yes. I was thinking, maybe even an animal can come.
Yes.
And what do I do? Mm. But... the desire to ride was much, much bigger. And the way I was feeling, it was amazing. So I did.
Can you describe that? Because I've been out on a couple of rides with you. I always find when I've been out with you, the pure joy that you have when you're on the bike is amazing. I mean, I really love cycling. I enjoy the turn of the pedal, the sound of the wheels, but for you it's something more, it feels to me. Can you describe what it makes you feel like?
Well, I will try to describe that, but I'm sure every person will feel this in their own way. Mm. I mean, we are all different and we have different personalities, and I think this is for every person is different. Well, for me, it gives me freedom. Mm-hmm. This is what I feel. When I jump on my bike and I know I need to ride for the next 24 hours or 48 hours and I don't need to care about anything else, and I have no bigger pleasure than that. Mm-hmm. I just feel that I'm free. Mm-hmm. I just feel that I can go anywhere I want. I can do whatever I want, and I'm on my bike.
Fabulous.
And that's it.
Yeah.
This is what it makes me feel to jump. Mm-hmm. Is unbelievable. The pleasure is so big. I don't think there is something else that makes me happier than that. So this is all I feel. I mean, that moment when you go out and leave the world back and you just see the nature, and the nature goes in a pace not too slow to get bored, not too fast to not miss have it. The time to see. It's just perfect. It's just perfect. You see all this nature, all these landscapes and everything that goes is just perfect. And they comes one by one. The thing is, you know, I wanted, when I was a child, I was thinking to become, when I will grow up, to become a sailor.
Oh, right.
I was enjoying to see the world. I wanted to see everything new all the time. So because of some things I couldn't get this job. Mm-hmm. So I needed to do something else instead. Yeah. But I still feel that need to see something new. Mm-hmm. So my perfect day, and I told that to many people, mm-hmm. my perfect day is when I'm going somewhere with my bike where I've never been before. Mm. When I see a place for the first time and I'm on my bike, I don't think there is something else that can make me happy, just to see that place. Mm. So this is why I'm so happy when I'm going everywhere I'm going and I see these places for the first time. Mm-hmm. If I'm going on a road several times, then I'm getting bored.
Right.
And I need to change it because it becomes monotone.
Yes, yes.
So that's why my rides are like crazy everywhere.
Yes.
So this is one of the points. And then at work, my colleagues started to see, did you see that? I said, no. Okay, can you see that? So during the week, we were doing like routes.
Yes.
Okay, for example, do you want to see where the Titanic was?
Right.
In Southampton.
Right.
I say, yeah, I want.
Yeah.
So this.
You rode to Southampton.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And then my colleague one Friday said, where are you going today? I said, I don't know. Where should I go? He said, you know, there are some paintings on the walls in Bristol. Mm. I don't remember the name of the guy. I don't know. Oh, anyway, this guy is very famous in England and he paints some big buildings. Yes. He said, okay, you need to find this. And she showed me a picture with one of the paintings. He said, take a picture with your bike in front of this.
Right.
So next day, Saturday, I jumped on the bike and I went there to find it. So I found it. I took pictures and this is how we started. And then every week,
we went somewhere new.
Yeah,
so,
we were creating another routes everywhere. So this is, and then this becomes something like
every week you do.
Every week, this is how I saw on the bike all the England.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You just name a place, and I'm sure I was.
So Liverpool,
everywhere.
Birmingham,
everywhere.
Manchester,
everywhere.
Anything that stands out in terms of.
Yeah, that is the picture.
Oh, that's the picture.
Yes.
Yeah, we're looking at Martin's wife is showing us some of the pictures. We'll put some in the in the notes if possible in Bristol.
Yeah,
that's fabulous. Was there anything that stood out in your travels throughout England that you remember a memorable I'm sure many, but. Could you choose maybe one or two interesting, I don't know, stories or things you remember that stand out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I while I was riding on the South Coast one weekend, I had a puncture. Well, uh-huh. I'm not sure if it was a puncture, but I had a big glass. Punching my tire, and the hole was so big I couldn't fix it, and I felt so disappointed because I was not ready for that.
Right.
At that time I was not carrying things like I'm carrying now on my bike, and I couldn't realize something like that could happen. And I was
the tire was slashed. You probably needed a new tire, no?
Yeah, I needed a new tire. Unfortunately, it was around 1 o'clock in the midnight, and I was 140 or something kilometers away from home, and it was Saturday night.
Nothing's open.
So it was really bad. Mm. I was in the middle of nowhere, no shops, no buildings, nothing. And I needed to walk.
Okay.
So I walked like 20 kilometers until I found a small house. I mean, it was a small village, probably with two or three houses at the side of the road. And I didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. I was thinking, Maybe I should knock on the door. Maybe what
should
I say?
We're talking about what, 2, 3 a.m., 4 a.m.?
No, it was 1. I think it was around 1 a.m.
Okay, well, still, people sleeping. Yeah,
yeah, I'm sure.
It's not, no, it's not the right, not the right time to knock on the door.
But I didn't know what to do. So I sit there, and then one guy came.
Yeah.
And he said, "You have a problem?" I said, "Yes, I have a problem." And then he gave me a new tire.
Wow.
Yeah, he said, "Okay, let me see if I can help you with it." He gave me a new tire. I paid for the tire because I felt. But that moment, I moved from one feeling, sad feeling. Yeah, I was disappointed. I didn't know what to do when it was night. To the other side, I was very happy, and I was thinking in several hours I will be home.
Yes,
and it was amazing.
That's an amazing story. When you meet a stranger and they're kind to you on the road, it's a great feeling.
So I next time when I pass there, I went to see the guy again, and we drink.
Oh right,
we drink a juice together.
Okay,
and, it was nice. I was very, very happy to see someone just asking if he can help.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing. Well, now I'm doing the same to others.
Right.
I went to, I don't remember the name. One of my last trips to.
You went to this down to the south coast again. No,
yeah. Rock Bay. I'm not sure exactly. Rocks. Yeah. And it was one guy, one cyclist on the side of the road there.
Yeah.
Trying to fix a puncture.
Yeah.
And I said, I stopped and I asked, "Do you need any help?" "Well, yeah, I need, because I don't know how to do that." And I was remembering 5 years ago, I didn't know how to do it. Yes. I said, "Okay, let me help you." And because of my experience, I did it in probably less than 6-7 minutes. And the guy said, "Wow, I'm here for more than 1 hour and I couldn't fit the tube inside."
Yeah.
So I showed him how to do it. And I said, "Next time I'm sure you will know how to do it." It was nice.
Very good. Yeah. Any other moments that stand out from those days, or?
There are a lot of moments. A lot of moments. It's hard to decide which one stands out. It's, they are all different.
Yes. Snowdonia?
No.
Okay.
Ultimo. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So so then you're building up the distance, the distances. So they're getting longer and longer.
Yeah.
And then when did you decide? I think I can do a 500 kilometer ride in one go. When do you remember when that was?
Well, the first time when I did this was when I joined the team that did the ride from Newcastle to London.
To London.
This was the first time when I passed 500 kilometers in 24 hours.
Mm.
And then I decided, well, if I did it in a team, I can do it alone. Mm-hmm. So I tried to do it alone, and it was like 470, 480, 460.
Yeah.
It was very difficult. I wanted to pass 500 in 24 hours elapsed time.
Yes.
Not riding time, which is
totally elapsed time.
Yes,
whoa.
Elapsed time. So I tried several times, and alone is difficult because when the night is coming, because of the fatigue, you're losing energy and you're not riding the same.
Mm.
So it was a bit difficult, but after several tries, I did it.
Yeah.
And then not only I did it, but I started to build up more. So I did 540, 560. And then I was thinking, what if I can do 600?
Uh-huh.
So the closest I was 581 kilometers in 24 hour elapsed time. And I'm still trying to beat that, but unfortunately, because now I had problems with the knees, I stopped doing this.
Yeah.
But it's still one of my targets I want to achieve.
Yes.
So probably if my knees will come back to normal, I will start again to do it. Yeah. But at the moment, I'm looking to ride. I mean, a normal ride for me. I'm saying for me because I know some people, not all cyclists want to do, but a normal ride for me is around 500 kilometers.
Wow. That's for most, it boggles the mind, but for you, I can completely see that. Disappointed if you wouldn't if you do less than that now.
Well, yeah, I've received a lot of invitations to ride with other people,
mm-hmm.
but when I'm thinking it's just 100 kilometers, 150 yeah. kilometers,
yeah.
I'm thinking I'm preparing so much to do this, and then when the ride starts to become nice and relaxing yeah. and everything, I need to come back home because it's done.
Yeah.
So I cannot say I don't enjoy them, but they are too short for me. I don't have time to acquire all I need to be relaxed. I need some time to to get in
to
this,
get into the rhythm. Yeah.
So that's why I'm not going to so much to ride. Or if the ride is not long enough.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the transcontinental race. So this is this race that it's a throwback kind of a thing that it goes from Belgium all the way through to Turkey. So from Europe to Asia is something like, it depends on the route, but it's about 4,500 kilometers, something like this, going through many, many countries. Most of the riders don't even finish. It's very challenging. When did you have the idea that, you'd like to do that race?
Well, I have this idea since I started to cycle. I mean, not really. Since I started to cycle long rides, I was thinking to start doing some nice rides. And I did London to Paris in one day, and then I was enjoying it so much. I was thinking I need to do big rides. And then one of my friends on Strava, Garrett Baines, he joined Transcontinental in 2013. No, 2014, sorry. And he posted something on Facebook, if I remember correctly. And I saw that post and I said, wow, I wanna do this. So I tried to register on this race and then it was too late.
Okay.
Unfortunately. And I said, okay, next year I'm first at the registration. When the registration is open, I will be first. So I was just preparing. I was watching the riders that year, looking what they are doing, posting on Facebook and everything. And I said, wow, that's amazing. I need to do this. I need to do it. Because it's exactly what I like. This kind of race is exactly what I like about cycling. To be alone, unsupported, just you and the nature.
So there's no the rules are that it's all self-supported. So you don't have a team. Don't have anything. The food that you get is what you bring with you or what you buy along the way. You can't collude with other riders or anything. And then you choose your own route. So you have like four or five checkpoints. Is that right?
Depends of the route or
every
year the checkpoints have changed, but usually there are four or five or three. It depends.
So last year when you did it, I think there was Mont Ventoux, which is a famous climb of in the Alps.
Jesus.
and then Assetto, which is somewhere in Italy.
Yeah,
and
Assieta.
Then Assieta in Italy, then Vukovar in Croatia, Lovsen in Montenegro, and then finally in Istanbul. Crossing into the Asian side. So
I'd like to talk about how that went for you. So you finished 47th. And there were 172 riders I saw
the starting
who started, and there were only 75 that finished.
Yes.
So 47th out of 172 is quite for your first transcontinental race is quite an achievement.
Yeah.
So well, let's talk about that. You're looking at me like I could have done better.
Well, the thing is, you know.
But were you there trying to compete? I mean, it's a competition, but it's in some ways it's not. It's an adventure, isn't it?
Well, maybe it's called transcontinental race, but I think you're not racing the others. Mm-hmm. You're racing you, because. When you start the race, in fact, you are the one that you need to overtake.
Mm-hmm.
Is difficult.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's difficult. It's a race, but this race is not won by the fastest.
Mm.
It's a race won by the most capable and organized person. Mm. It's not only about speed, it's about organizing, mm-hmm. it's about discipline.
So what are the types of things that you need to organize? Obviously all of your kit, your bike, I guess where you're going to stay, the route. What are some of the things that you need to have well organized?
Well, you need to have well organized your time.
Mm-hmm.
Once you start the race, time is your priority.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you stay on the bike as much as possible, that means you win the race.
Mm-hmm.
When you get off the bike, then you're losing.
Right. Sleeping, eating, everything. Yeah.
The clock doesn't stop only when you finish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
it's kind of like a throwback to the early days of the Tour de France when there weren't it was all self-supported. There were sort of no rules. They had these monster stages of 400 kilometers through the Alps and this kind of thing. It's very different from what it is now.
Well, it's different, but I believe this is real cycling.
Yes.
This is real cycling, not having a crew behind mm-hmm. you that is pushing you mm-hmm. all the time, and then mm-hmm. you ride 100 kilometers and
mm.
And more than that, to be honest with you, I really don't like Tour de France.
Right.
I don't like it. Mm-hmm. I watch from time to time because I like to see the bikes. I like to see how they cycle.
Yes.
But, you know, I'm not sure if I should talk about that, but we all know drugs are one of the problems.
Yes.
In any sport and in cycling too.
I think any time there's a lot of money involved in any sport,
which is bad.
you get this kind of behavior, and we don't know that the Tour de France is probably cleaner than it was, but Chris Froome published his power numbers this week, but there's always a suspicion, or you don't know what's exactly going on. We'll see. But anyway, let's
so
back to the transcontinental race. Yeah. So you're in. You started in Belgium.
To be honest with you, I started in London.
Okay, you started in front of your house. So you cycled to Belgium.
Well, I did a mistake. This was my first mistake.
Okay.
I started at 11 o'clock in the night.
Uh-huh.
And I said, okay, I'm cycling until Charing Cross
uh-huh.
or King's Cross.
Uh-huh.
And I will take the train from there to Belgium, to... Mm.
To Brussels.
No, yeah. To Calais.
To Calais, yeah.
Yeah, and from Calais I will You'll ride from next there. Day.
Okay, okay.
But when I went there, there was no train. I don't know why, because I was looking on the train table.
Right.
And I think I was looking on the wrong day, probably. Mm. I don't know.
Okay.
Anyway, there was no
train. So be organized, yeah.
So I was thinking, what the hell? It's just 150 kilometers uh-huh. until there. I can do it. Uh-huh. So I started to cycle. I went to Dover.
Yes.
And then I took the ferry to Calais. And then from Calais, I went to a small town, Kort. I don't know the Belgian, how to pronounce mm-hmm. in Belgium. Is Kort Trish, something okay. like that. okay. So I was already tired. Mm-hmm. I booked a room there and I slept overnight. Mm-hmm. And the next day I went to Gerhard's Bargen.
Yes.
Where is the
start of the TCR. Mm-hmm.
So I already had 300 kilometers mm-hmm. when before the start. Mm. That was a mistake. I needed to rest and mm-hmm. I didn't do it properly. Mm-hmm. I was already tired because mm-hmm. I already cycled through the night. Mm. And more mm-hmm. than that, my biggest issue was the saddle.
Okay.
Because, well, but before that, you know, 3 weeks before the start of the race, my bike was stolen.
Yes, I heard about that. Yeah, I saw
and
that.
The saddle that I have is a saddle, special saddle mm-hmm. from leather. Mm. And like any leather thing, you need to break it.
Yes, so you got a new one.
I got a new one that wasn't broken. Mm.
If you're going to be in the saddle for that long, it needs to be comfortable.
Mm. Yes, after 3 weeks when in France, when I crossed in Italy, mm. I couldn't ride anymore. Mm. That was the first moment when I was thinking to scratch from the race. Mm. I really couldn't ride. I was riding on the pedals. Mm-hmm. I couldn't sit on the saddle. Mm-hmm. This mm-hmm. is how bad it was. Well, imagine having a pair of new shoes. Mm. Yeah. You know how bad it is the first several days when you wear them. Mm. Well, that problem was on my mm-hmm. bike. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it was
Were you spending 20 hours a day sometimes?
Yeah. So I've lost...
It's tough. Yeah.
I think more than 2 days.
Okay. So from Belgium through to...
Through Italy.
Yes.
I've lost around 2 days resting and trying to find out the problem.
Yeah.
At the end in Italy, I saw the problem somehow, sort of. But it was better, so mm-hmm. I could ride a bit mm-hmm. more. But another problem came with my plug. You know, usually all long ride cyclists, they have dynamos.
Yes, yes.
Because they need to charge.
Yeah, you need to charge the phone, the
GPS,
light.
Exactly. So most of them, they have dynamos.
Yeah.
So I was just building my bike mm-hmm. this way. So I had a dynamo as well. And I used a plug, mm-hmm. a USB plug mm-hmm. that is connected to the dynamo. So it was much easier for me to charge it mm-hmm. in the USB. But my dynamo died.
Right.
In France. And that means I didn't have power to charge my phone. I didn't have power to charge my lights. I didn't have power to charge my Garmin, which was the most important piece of
the
ride.
Right.
Because I had on my Garmin all the routes. I had
everything there. Right.
So at some point I was using my phone to go to get directions. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of time. I've lost a lot of time. Just mm-hmm. every corner I needed to take out the phone and check if I'm going on the right road. And sometimes I realized I'm going on a wrong direction. I need mm-hmm. to come back. And it was not so pleasant, but.
Yes. I've done that on short sportives, short for, by your standards, but where I just miss the arrow sign. But this is something completely different.
Well, you know how frustrating it is.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
And at some point I found a power bank.
Okay.
Big battery that you can use as a USB plug to mm-hmm. charge the phone. And I was using that power bank just to charge my Garmin mm-hmm. to make sure I have at least routes, okay? Mm-hmm. But it was not enough because I needed to stop every 24, 36 hours mm-hmm. in a hotel to mm-hmm. charge them to charge back. It up. And I needed mm-hmm. to charge the lights as well. Mm-hmm. So it was, mm-hmm. I've lost a lot of time. Mm-hmm. I was planning to sleep in a hotel like four times for the mm-hmm. whole ride. And I ended up sleeping like 10 times.
Wow. Okay.
Unfortunately. So this is why I finished 47.
Okay.
My target was to finish in first 10.
Right.
And for next year is the same target.
Okay.
I hope my knees this time mm-hmm. will be much better.
Yeah. So you started to get that working a little bit better though around so the saddle and the charging and around Italy
after that.
And then you went through lots of interesting places, so
11 countries.
So let me know if I've missed one, but I have here, so well, you've got Belgium, France, Italy, and then Slovenia, Croatia, Bosnia, Montenegro, Macedonia, Bulgaria, and Turkey.
Yeah.
Did I miss one?
Nope.
No. Okay. Good.
Well,
what?
I missed one because Kosovo was on the plan.
Okay. What was going on in Kosovo?
Well, I spent the whole night trying to enter in Kosovo.
Oh no!
It was.
They wouldn't let you.
I felt like a smuggler.
Oh right. What was going on there?
Well, I checked if I am allowed to go into Kosovo mm-hmm. and it seems it was no problem, and there is no problem, mm-hmm. but the places I've choose to cross into Kosovo were not the right places.
Okay.
It was not only, it was, I don't know how to say, it was not a place to cross mm-hmm. the border. Mm-hmm. It was just a place for military people or
I see.
Whoever is the police
right.
department.
So they wouldn't, yeah. you weren't authorized
to
cross.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. So mm-hmm. I went to the border and the police that was there mm-hmm. said, you're not allowed to cross, go back. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, I cannot go back 70 kilometers.
How frustrating.
It was in the night, but I needed to in the mountains. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
it's not 70 kilometers flat. It's you'd have to climb back up serious.
Well, no, I climbed back, so it was easy to come back.
Yes,
but the problem was I was thinking 70 kilometers back, and then what do I choose? I didn't know because my route was through Kosovo.
Right.
So I went further, and then I found another mm-hmm. barrier, uh-huh. and I tried to ask someone there. It was in the night, like 1 a.m. in the night or 12. I don't remember exactly. So I knocked, it was a car there, and I saw someone sleeping in uh-huh. the car. So I knocked in the car. The guy mm-hmm. came outside. He was a military, I don't know, a soldier. Mm-hmm. So I asked him if I can go to Kosovo. He said, yeah, you can go to Kosovo, mm-hmm. but you need to climb this. And
right.
he showed me after like 100 meters, the mm-hmm. road was finished.
Yes.
But finished in the way that there was no more road.
There was no pavement.
It was just hill.
Oh.
And then he showed me a small trail, and he said,
"You have to go off road.
you can go there. You can climb it if you want." So I tried to climbing, but it was impossible.
On the bike?
No.
Oh, just carrying the bike. Yeah.
But it was impossible. It was like a forest.
Right.
And
okay.
there was no paths, no trails. Right. So right. I didn't know where to go. And then when I looked up, it was really like several hundred meters. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, I'm not going to do this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm going to sleep here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to wait for mm-hmm. the day to come. And I will see what's here because mm-hmm. I didn't know what. Mm-hmm. And then I slept like 2 hours. And then I wake up and I said, what the hell? If I need to go back, at least now. So I turned back to the first guys and I asked them, guys, look, I want to cross Kosovo. Said, man, you cannot cross on this side. It's impossible. This side is specially created for people not to cross.
Yes.
Because we are here just to make sure there is no smuggling.
Right.
Well, I don't know what kind of smuggling they can do there.
Yes.
So I turned back. I turned back and then I decided to go to Albania.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So.
And that wasn't your favorite of places, apparently.
No.
No.
It was one of the worst experiences.
Okay. Oh, no.
Well, I have nothing with these people. And I really
I'm sure they're
like
wonderful
them.
People. Yes. Yeah.
I really like yes. them. And I felt nice because it was very... The feeling was close, like in my country. But they don't drive properly.
Okay.
Well, I think...
I take it they also don't see too many cyclists either.
I don't know.
Okay.
I really don't. I saw cyclists
okay.
in Albania. But I don't know. I didn't realize. Mm-hmm. Anyway, their big tool in the car is the horn.
Sure.
They horn every time they do something.
Right.
Is
they don't rather than indicate or slow
no,
down.
Just,
they just
horn.
Horn. Okay.
Just horn. At the beginning was so annoying because I didn't realize why they horn me. Why? Mm-hmm. Why? 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 And then mm-hmm. I realized they just do it because they want someone to look at them or they want to make you aware that they are
that
behind
there.
You
sure.
or things like that.
But it's a bit...
But they don't have rules. This
right.
is this is what was scared
mm-hmm.
me.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have rules. So when you go in the town, I try to avoid the towns mm. because when you go in the town, people are crossing the street everywhere. They don't even look.
Mm.
Cars are crossing the streets from all the sides.
A bit of chaos, yeah.
It's a bit of chaos. I'm sure if you stay there for a while, you'll get
you'll
used
figure it
to
out.
It.
There's a system probably.
Yes,
but,
I'm sure there is a
yeah,
system.
Yeah.
It's impossible not to be because otherwise
yeah.
it will be a
yes,
chaos there.
Yes.
But for me... For the first time, it was a bit strange, and I tried to avoid it as much as possible. But the country is amazing.
Right.
The roads are amazing. So I will go again. If I
right.
have the chance, I will go again.
Right.
More than that, it's cheap.
Okay.
And this
yes.
is very important
yes.
when you are self-supported.
That's true. That's true.
The food is cheap, and you can find the food everywhere. This is
okay.
something nice, even in the... 3 a.m. in the morning,
you can find
food.
Something to eat.
This is amazing, especially when you are self-supported. This is very
mm-hmm.
important.
Mm-hmm. How did you meet on the road? I imagine in places like France and Italy is not a problem, but I imagine if you, in some of the countries it's more challenging.
No.
No? Okay.
Well, I don't know for others. For me, it was not a challenge.
No. Okay.
I could find food whenever yep. I wanted.
Okay.
Well, usually...
What would you normally? You normally you'd have to eat you know, heavy carbs.
I eat
or whatever,
everything.
Anything.
Well, I don't take power gels.
No,
I don't take
so bad
powders
yeah,
and
so
energy bars
really
and things
you.
Like that. I'm,
yeah.
I'm not taking this one. I prefer food.
Yes,
real food. And well. It was not a problem for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm not sure if someone was facing this kind of problem,
mm-hmm.
but I really didn't have any problem. When I wanted to eat, I was just stopping and I was just.
And you just had your sleeping bag with you to
no
sleeping bag. Okay.
No.
Okay.
I
saw some of the riders did have
yes.
Some sleeping
yes.
bags around with them.
Yes, they had mm-hmm. and. I wanted to do it as well, but in April last year, I tried a ride to Scotland, and this was the first time when I had
saw,
a problem
I saw this,
with the knee.
Okay, I saw this ride was like 2,000 kilometers from London into Scotland,
yeah, and
through
then
the
I
Highlands
on
and
the
back
other side in Glasgow
yeah,
because
yeah.
I couldn't bend my knee.
Wow,
it was so bad. It was. I couldn't really bend my knee.
Mm-hmm.
It was bad.
Wow.
And then I decided to... This is the reason why I didn't took the sleeping bag with me in the race. Because it was too heavy at the back.
I see.
And I tried to make something else.
Right.
To do it. Well,
it's the summer, so it was a little bit easier.
It was. Mm. It was easier.
But,
well, one of the worst nights was after I came down from Mount Ventoux
mm-hmm.
because I slept in a bush.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you are aware, but on Mont Ventoux, the wind is terrible.
Yes, yes.
It's so terrible. Mm. So I slept in a bush. At some point, the wind just drove me outside. And it was...
Wow.
I didn't go back because I was too lazy, so I slept outside of the bush. So... But it was okay. It was not cold. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you were you're then making your way. So after the Kosovo problem, then you went through Albania.
Yes, I crossed Albania.
You crossed Albania.
Came back to Macedonia and then Bulgaria.
Mm-hmm. What were some of your?
It was a detour of 400. It's 27 kilometers, something like that.
Ooh, okay. Add up the problems with the saddle and the charger and Kosovo.
Yes.
Yeah, that's easily a few days gone, isn't it?
Yeah, I did instead of 4,127 kilometers, I did 400 and 500 kilometers.
Okay.
Hey, 400 kilometers is half of day.
That's right. Yeah.
More than half of day, so. I cannot say I'm not happy with the results, especially after so many problems I had. I know people that had the same problem and they scratched from the race.
A number of people scratched from the race.
Yes.
One guy had a neck problem and,
Yes, that guy, I think it's James Hayden.
Yes.
He was fantastic on the first three or four days. He was leading the race.
Yes.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Amazing. But I think, he underestimates the speed.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him riding with a speed that was not a proper speed for this kind of race. This is my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I think he went too fast for the first several days, and that's why he had the problems.
You should see. I'll put a link in the notes of the show, but you should see this guy's neck is all. Slanted to the front because I guess he's in this riding position.
Well, did you see the pictures with him trying to keep
his neck with a piece of tape or something like that? That's
Well, I hope he's coming next year because he deserves.
Yes,
he deserves a place.
Yes.
In the first.
So you said you thought about scratching. Two times. Was the saddle.
One was the saddle when it was. Bad.
Yes.
Very bad. And the second time was in Bulgaria when I realized...
You're very close to home, aren't you, at that point?
Yeah.
I should go home.
Closest to home, I was like 200 kilometers in Vukovar.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, 200 kilometers? Wow. I can go home in several hours.
Have a home-cooked meal. Yes.
Yeah, that was nice. But when I was so close to home, I was thinking, it was good. But in Bulgaria, at some point, I realized my wife, I did the plan, for 10 days, 11 days. I said, okay, I can extend up to 12 days.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it took me 16 days to finish. So, we planned the holiday. My wife wanted to come to see and wait for me.
And then you would have had a holiday in Turkey.
So she had the holiday alone.
Okay.
So in Bulgaria, I realized that. Yeah. And I said, okay, I want to join my wife.
Sure.
Rather than spending another 3 days or 4 days and on this ride, I want to join my wife and then have a small holiday, see the Istanbul town and then... go back.
Yeah.
So I called her and I said, look, I want a scratch from the race. And she said, I'm going to kill you. What do you want to do me now?
Yeah.
You pay me to come to see you. Yeah. I want to see you at the finish line. And now you're telling me you want a scratch from the race. So, okay. That was the moment when I said, okay, if my wife says that, then I can do it. So I was thinking, I had a nice, dinner after that in a small restaurant in one of the towns in Bulgaria was the best dinner of the whole race. I eat so much and I asked for two desserts.
Right.
Yeah. And it was amazing. And then I sit there and I was trying to sort out the plan, how to finish as fast as possible. So from there, the race was easy.
Then you figured it out.
Because I was peaceful. I was, I wouldn't worry. I was not worried about my wife anymore. Mm-hmm. So it was easy. And then the worst part was when I was getting close to Istanbul, the dogs.
The dogs?
Well, I'm not afraid of dogs because we have this kind of dogs in my country as well. And
it's wild dogs, basically.
Yeah, it's just dogs. But there were so many.
Really?
At some point, there is a hill close to Istanbul. I don't know the name of the hill. Where are really in crowds. Like 10, 12, 15 dogs. And I was very tired. It was 2 a.m. in the morning. 2 a.m. or 1 a.m. or something like that. Anyway, I was falling asleep. And at some point, I was thinking, okay, what should I do now? Because maybe I should stop. You know, when you are almost to fall asleep, your mind is not so clear. And then I realized I'm between the dogs.
You don't want to be dog food.
I didn't realize when this happened, but there were like 5 or 6 dogs around me. And I was so scared. So I started to pedal and to push. And then I leave them behind. And I said, okay, what am I doing now? So the next time when I met the dogs, I just step off the bike and I started to chase them.
I know. Okay.
Yeah, so it was easy because they started to run away in the woods and then it was easy to go. But it's scary, you know, if you don't pay attention.
This is one of the things that I would really worry about 500 kilometer ride or 400 kilometer, whatever the distance is falling asleep on the bike. And what, I mean, that's scary. There was a guy who did, this, 50, you know, the Ironman triathlon.
Yes.
He did 50 of them in 50 states in 50 days in, the US. And, one of the days he fell asleep on the bike and, he, yeah, obviously crashed.
It happens a lot if you look at Trans Am as well. I saw people falling off the bikes.
The Trans America race.
So, yeah. Well,
How do you guard against that? Do you just, when you start to feel...
Well, usually when I feel like that, I just stop and sleep like 10 minutes.
Okay.
You don't need more. 10, 15 minutes and then you are a bit refreshed. Not... Properly, but
you can continue.
You can continue. Well, but one time it happened to me as well when I came from, you know, I had a favorite route from London, Folkestone, and then South Coast and up to Southampton and then back to London.
Back.
So this was one of my favorite routes. I did it, I think, 20, 30 times last year. And in one of the rides, I fall asleep.
Right.
And I woke up in the middle of a roundabout.
Oh, okay.
That was the first time and the last time.
Yeah.
So now when I feel that I
take a break.
Just stop. And then even if it's nothing, usually, you know, we're thinking, oh, I'm going to stop at the next petrol station.
Yes,
or
but that could
I'm
be
gonna stop.
30, 40 kilometers
away.
But
if I feel I'm like that, ready to fall asleep, I just stop and stay there 10 minutes. Even if I don't take a nap,
or
just stay there for 10 minutes. And then when you carry on, you are a bit refreshed and you can think. So, yeah, it's very dangerous. This is very dangerous.
Okay. Well, hopefully, thankfully that didn't happen very, very much on the TCR.
Well, it didn't happen because I slept a lot in the hotels.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I needed to because otherwise I couldn't charge my batteries.
Yes.
So I needed, at some point I was paying a room just to charge my batteries. Oh, wow. And I was watching cartoons for 5 hours.
Oh.
And then I started again.
Okay. Well, but you got you made it in the end.
Yeah.
16 days. What was it like when you finally crossed the formal finish line? I mean, I don't know how do they these control points, right?
It's just a control point. Mm-hmm. It's the same like any other control point, mm-hmm. but the feeling is totally different.
Yes.
Well, imagine for this distance, I didn't have a puncture.
Yeah.
But with 5 kilometers before the finish line, I had the first puncture.
Oh!
And I was thinking, now I need to pedal fast because I don't want to fix this puncture. So I stopped.
Yes.
I put one carbon dioxide
canister. Yes, CO2 canister. Yeah.
I
filled it up to the maximum.
To the maximum. Yeah. And I start to pedal like crazy. So when I arrived at the finish line, I could still pedal on the bike.
Right.
But
it's gone. It's gone. Yeah, yeah. Starting to
potholes, you can feel the rim.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Fabulous.
It was amazing. Yeah, it was amazing. When I finished, I realized I did such a long journey. Even now, when I'm thinking back, there are so many memories from different countries and different places I saw. It's unbelievable. I cannot tell you. You need to do. I think any cyclist should try this.
Should try this
one time at least.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of race is exactly what I need to be relaxed, to be happy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That sounds great. That's brilliant, Martin. We should probably start to wrap it up. But just thinking about, you know, where you came from with your, you know, 150-pound bike, with the multiple punctures and the finishing the transcontinental race is, I mean, in 4 years in that time?
Yeah.
That's absolutely astonishing. It's quite the journey is just amazing. It boggles the mind a little bit, but at the same time, I can understand because you have the passion for it, so it's actually quite easy, isn't it?
Well,
in
yes.
some ways, I don't mean to say it's easy, but when you have that passion for it, it makes it so much. It just
it's not easy when you think you need to push a lot.
Yes,
when you need to give a lot from your body, but it's easy because it's something that I like.
Yes,
so it's no push at all. It's just something that you're doing for pleasure and comes so easy. It's I don't know. For me, I don't see an effort. Indeed it's an effort because if you take into consideration how exposed you are when you start a race like this.
Yes.
You're going in unknown.
When you think about it, you are going into the unknown and it is very uncertain. And when you think about it, all the things that could go wrong and, you know, it becomes quite daunting. And, why would anyone do this? You sometimes think, it sounds crazy, but I don't know. The way you describe it makes it feel like actually, you're the sane one and, the people that don't do it are maybe the crazy ones, because, it's, you know, you.
Well, yeah, could be true.
I wanted to, before we wrap up, maybe ask, you know, if you were to offer advice to someone who's thinking about maybe doing, maybe not necessarily the transcontinental race or cycling or anything, but just finding the thing that they really truly enjoy, and getting the kind of experience that you get and the feeling that you get, what would you advise them to do?
Well, I can advise them only from my life experience.
Yes.
like I said, we are all different. We have different personalities. We are different. Well, the thing is, you need to follow your what you believe.
Mm-hmm.
I think as long as you are happy, you are
mm-hmm.
You are satisfied with what you think and what you your body, your soul is happy, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter the rest. If you follow your desires, if you try to achieve what you want, and let me give you an example for mm-hmm. this, because I'm sure it's very difficult for me to mm-hmm. explain more than that. It's not English is not mm-hmm. my primary, and I feel a bit difficult.
You're
to
doing
explain
quite well,
this.
But
I'm trying. Believe me. A lot of people, if you saw my Strava account, I have a lot of people that mm. following me mm. there. And most of them are asking me about, why don't you race with that? Mm. Why don't you get a comb on I don't know what segment and mm-hmm. things like that? And I said, because for me, there is no challenge in this.
Mm-hmm.
But what is the challenge for me is if Marcian from yesterday... Mm-hmm. Marcian from today is better than the mm. one from yesterday.
Mm.
So if today I'm going to beat one of my records from yesterday, mm. then I am very happy.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want to say with this is you cannot make all people happy.
Mm.
It's impossible
mm.
to make people happy, but mm. you can make yourself happy.
Mm. Mm.
So this is what matters. This is what cares for me.
Well, that's beautifully put. And even if you're not a native English speaker, absolutely beautifully put. last question is, when you go on these rides, what does your wife think about all of this? How you're away for, you know, long stretches.
Well, if I wouldn't have her support.
Mm.
Probably it would be difficult for me to do this.
Absolutely.
But she understands me and she wants to see me happy. And she knows this is what makes me happy. Mm. So she's supporting me 100%. And this is very important. When you are alone, it's easy because it's just you. But when you are in two, it's important to be supported like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
it's wonderful. Well, I think I think we'll wrap it up there. So hopefully we'll see you in the Transcontinental Race 2016.
And, I hope so. I'm waiting for the application to be approved. It will happen within the next 2 weeks. So
wonderful, Martin. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak. This was great.
Thank you very much,
and,
Ben.
And we should get together and go on a ride at some point as well.
As soon as you want.
Wonderful. I might need to train a little bit to make sure that a long ride is at least a medium ride for you. But thank you so much, Martin. Well, that was a lot of fun to have. That was a lot of fun to have that conversation with Martin. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed conversing with him. An update: Martin's application for the 2016 Transcontinental Race was approved. So we look forward to following him this summer as he tries to crack the top 10 or even better. That starts on the 30th of July at midnight in Belgium. And as you heard, it finishes when it finishes. I also hope that you got the same impression that I did, that Martin just might be one of the few sane people we have on this planet. I'm reminded of that John Lennon song, Watching the Wheels, which was released, I think, a year or two after Lennon's death. And I think that just typifies Martin. You also heard from his wonderful wife, Dorina, who's incredibly supportive, which I think is another lesson that Martin can provide, which is if you do find that thing that you absolutely love, do make that work with those around you and with your responsibilities. Don't just sort of hop on your bike for you know, 18 or 24 hours. If, for example, you're married with kids, find a way to make that work. I'm sure there's a way, but do find it. Okay. I wanted to just make a quick appeal. If you did enjoy this episode, please share it, or please like the post. Give us a review or a rating on iTunes. Please subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or however you get your podcasts. This show I started as a labor of love to have the kinds of conversations you just heard. But I do want to know that it's reaching an audience and people are listening, so it would be great to hear from you. I set up a Twitter account for the show, @RiskThings, so it will provide updates on new episodes, on guests, anything happening with the show. Give us a follow there. I had my first tweet with that account just over a week ago, and I've gone from zero followers to grand total of 12, which is encouraging. Not bad for a week. If you have any other feedback, suggestions for guests or anything like that, you can email me at allthingsrisk@gmail.com. Visit the allthingsrisk.com webpage, and I am in the process of setting up a Facebook page for the show, and we'll let you know when that is up. That will do it for me for this week. We've got some more wonderful episodes in the works. They will be up shortly. You will find out all about them if you do give us a follow, and I'm sure that you'll enjoy them. That's it. We will sign off and see you soon, and don't forget, risk is life.